everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Jude Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. 2025 is upon us. But before we get any further into the new year, Pastor Judah and I are going to take a look back at 2024, share with you some of our favorite books, movies, TV shows, other stuff from the year. We'll share some great memories, some tough memories. We'll talk about what we're looking forward to as we move into 2025. Listen on, and you might get a few recommendations that will make this year even better for you. All that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Disaster. So maybe, you know, maybe this is the end. I don't know, but we'll see.
We'll see.
So we're looking back at 2024. And before we get into some specifics, which I don't know about you, I love giving like recommendations 100%. Or like sharing my favorite
things. I'm probably
more
excited about this episode than any other episode.
And I like listening to other people's favorite things. Like that's how I like end up with most of the books I read or things I listen to is from recommendations from others. So, but before we get into the specifics, like big picture, as you look at 2024, just for you personally in the context of your life, like how was this year for you?
Yeah, 2024 for me was like the most mixed year ever. Like there were like so many like super phenomenal, wonderful things that happened to me that I experienced, that I got to be a part of. And there were also like some really, really hard moments. And it almost feels like a little disjointed. I was preparing for this episode and thinking about this year and like having a hard time even remembering if some of the things that I want to share today happened this year because it feels so far removed from some of the other things that happened this year. So it was super mixed, but I was like really blessed this year. Yeah, what about you? 2024 for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I sit down and our family still writes a Christmas letter that goes out with our Christmas cards. So we obviously have the time to kind of reflect on the year. And it was interesting. I was comparing this year to last year. And like 2023 was a banger, man, in the Kiley household.
Way?
Oh yeah. Like we had all sorts of like huge things happen throughout the year. I mean, I think about like—
You got your dog.
We got our dog. We prioritize in our family.
I was advocating for that. That's
yes,
why it's important
were,
to
you
me.
Were.
I was gonna stage a protest.
Very
Brian,
important.
Brian was not being very equitable with his sons over this, this desire that they had for a dog.
But we got a dog and he's wonderful. Likes to fight with me, which, you know, whatever. He just likes to wrestle and bite. So that is what it is. But we got the dog. Both of my brothers got married, which was awesome. In our family, we've decided that like at two key points in our son's lives, they'll go on a long trip with me, just the two of us. And like the first one is at 10 years old. And we did that with, you know, my son Joey, which was just an incredible time away. So just a lot of huge stuff. And as I look back at 2024, tons of great moments, tons of wonderful memories. We were reaching a little bit more to find like, okay, what were some of the highlights? Not that it wasn't a good year and not that there wasn't cool stuff that happened, but that maybe relative to some other years and some of the other, you know, things we've done, it felt like a little more, you know, a little more mellow, which is like, okay, you know, I'm 42. Not every year has to be the greatest year of my life. But similar to you, I get to the end of the year and I look back and just go, man, like my life is blessed in so many different ways.
Yeah, come on.
So far beyond anything I could hope to deserve and so far beyond anything that I can really claim to have earned in a lot of ways. Like we all work hard, we all do different things, but you just go, man, there's just a lot of instances where just things have gone well for me and I'm just grateful to God and grateful to I don't know, just anything I get, like everything is grace and it's a joy.
I love that. Everything is grace. That's a book title.
Is it a book?
I'm saying for you, like your memoir, Everything is Grace.
I think that's
by Brian
Kiley. I feel like Brian Manning was the one
Brian
who said that
Kiley.
Never to be Dr. Brian Kiley. All right. So let's get into it. Now it's too much pressure for me, Pastor Judah, to say my favorite of anything.
Yeah.
So for all of these categories, we're sharing kind of one of our favorites. And maybe if we want to do like an honorable mention or something like that, that's fine. But we're not saying like, this is the one.
Yeah, that's right.
But we're going, this one was really something that stood out to me. So let's start with you. books. What was one of your favorite books of 2024?
Yeah, so you know, in 2024, I actually found myself rereading a lot of older, old books or books that I had already read. I think just kind of comfort reading. But one of the new books that I have found to be most helpful, I read earlier in the year, and it has been the most helpful for this season of the year for me. And I read this book by the incomparable Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, Notes on Grief. And it is a meditation on mourning, an exploration of the kind of multifaceted nature of mourning. She lost her father.
Wow.
And then shortly after that, she lost her mother, and then shortly after that lost her father, back to back, like months. Wow. Months apart, both sudden, you know, really traumatic. And she just really, she gave me such language for grief in the nuanced way that I think I need for this current season that I'm in. And permission to grieve and... I was not raised in a lot of Nigerian culture, but I'm like 80% Nigerian. And so I've been really paying a lot of attention to, I found that out through 23andMe, I've been paying a lot of attention to and learning a lot about Nigerian culture. And I am very Nigerian, just naturally. And so the way that her book, it's really an essay, is really grounded in the Nigerian culture too. And I just really have found it to be so extraordinarily helpful, especially because she is somebody that I so admire and so respect. And to see her just allow herself to be so publicly broken has been just extraordinarily encouraging for me. So that's one of my favorites. What about you?
All right. Yeah, this is a great year of reading for me. I love to read, and I love at the end of the year looking back at just all the different books I've read and everything else. This year I read two books that would probably be in the top maybe 15 longest books I've ever read in my life. So that necessarily drives the total down. But as I was looking back on everything I've read in 2024, two books really stuck out to me. One was back when we did our Faith and Politics series, I just did a ton of reading.
Yeah,
you did.
You were swamped.
And there was a book by a guy named Paul D. Miller called The Religion of American Greatness, What's Wrong with Christian Nationalism. And he is a conservative Christian dude, and the critique of Christian nationalism, obviously, I mean, there's much to critique there. And I thought his book was masterful, not only in making his argument, but the book itself was a masterclass on how to make an argument. So much that passes for sort of pop-level persuasion these days is strawmanning, where you try to make your opponents look ridiculous and then attack that sort of caricatured version.
Yeah.
The opposite of that is steelmanning, where you say, no, I want to engage with actually the best arguments of people who disagree with me. And that is what he did. He quoted extensively from advocates, and he was just very kind of methodical about picking apart arguments against his point of view, but in a way that it was respectful, much as it was firm. So,
give us the title
Christian
again.
Nationalism is obviously an incredibly dangerous, and it's not a Christian worldview, and I would argue it's not patriotic either. But I think, frankly, that I've encountered a lot of critiques of Christian nationalism that are not great, that are just low quality. And if you know anything about me, you can argue for a perspective I agree with. But if you do it in a really lame way, like, I'm not with you. Like, that's a bad argument for a good idea. What Paul D. Miller did, and this is not like light bedtime reading. This was one of the most dense books I read all year.
Oh, okay.
But
that was going to be my question, was like, do you think that somebody who maybe is leaning into Christian nationalism would read that and be able to change their mind? Or is it for somebody who does not lean into that and needs some tools for navigating their community members that maybe do?
I think it depends. I mean, so much of persuasion is willingness to be persuaded. So I would say anybody who can approach it with an open mind, I think it is as good of a critique as you're going to get, and certainly does just a wonderful job of showing how this is a really dangerous, really anti-Christian, certainly anti-conservative worldview. But again, so much of persuasion is that willingness. And if you're not willing to be persuaded, then like, don't waste your time. Like, there's just, there's so much psychological research that shows if we are going to just dig in our heels, there's really no point in engaging other perspectives. So that was a lot on that book. But the other book I want to mention is Practicing the Way by John Mark Comer. Mm. It was just, it's a... It
I knew Comer was going to be on your list.
Meat and potatoes discipleship book. It's a book that my kids will read when they're old enough. It is a book I will reread, I know, many times, just on kind of the practicality of how do we actually live out the way of Jesus. So we do some stuff with some of the Practicing the Way material in our classes, and it's always been well received. And it was a phenomenal book. So those were my two. To say nothing about Having the Mind of Christ by Matt Tebe and Ben Sternke, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, and How to Know a Person by David.
You better Brooks. Sneak in these extra books.
I am sneaking them in. You know me. I just love books. So anyway, that's
books. Listen, I am not nearly as much of a reader as you are. I am actually much more. I really love the media of film. And so
let's jump in there.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
This is your area. What were your? Yeah, I could tell from your face you were about to ask me. But I've talked too much. What was your favorite movie you saw this year?
Or so there's a movie on Netflix called Shirley, and it is starring Regina King, and it is about Shirley Chisholm. Shirley Chisholm was the first Black woman to run for president for a national party.
Oh wow!
And
when was that?
Ish. The 70s, okay. I think.
Okay, but somewhat recently.
Yeah. Like she's dead, but she died in my lifetime.
Okay.
And it's just her story. And she was fantastic because she managed to sit in the face of all of the misogyny and all of the racism that, of course, she was dealing with at that time, being the only her in, you know, she was elected to Congress. And she was so joyful and so sharp. There's this story about how, she just like there in, I guess the congressional cafeteria, mm-hmm. everybody like had their tables and like, if you're a Democrat, you know, you kind of sat over here and if you're a Republican, you sat over there. And she just said, I'm gonna sit where I want it. And so she just started sitting with like this one table of these like old conservative, like white dudes. And like, they like learned to love her. Like she really won them over. And, I just think about all of the, you know, progress we've made on that front and how we so stand on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. So it's a great movie. And cool. Then my honorable mentions, of course, is Wicked.
Obviously.
But I just went to see Gladiator 2.
Okay.
Denzel is an actor of actors. He is fantastic. And I also just want to celebrate him. He just got ordained.
Right.
Talk about Pastor Denzel.
Him. All right. Yeah, Pastor Denzel. Yeah. I heard the movie wasn't that good, though.
I think I've heard that, too. People are critical. And I think maybe as a whole, the movie was probably, like, fine. He was fantastic.
Okay.
He was
I mean, Denzel's phenomenal.
Fantastic.
So,
yeah. And the action was just really good. I mean, it was just, you know, the technology had there's a gladiator fight in an arena with water. They're on boats in the arena fighting. It's just cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your turn. Favorite movies.
My favorite movie of the year, I'm going to give it to The Wild Robot. So this was a movie I saw with my family, and I thought, I mean, it's a kids movie, but, you know, not like super kiddish.
Yeah.
They threw in plenty of humor for the grownups, which I always appreciate. It was a really touching story of kind of the premise is this like super personal assistant robot thing that is meant to kind of handle everything for people, like due to like, I forget, it was like a shipwreck or something, ends up like floating up onto this deserted island and basically becomes sort of involved in the life of the island with all like the animals. And there's, I mean, it attaches to this one particular bird and helps kind of raise the bird. The bird had lost its mom. Mm. And the whole, it was very touching. It was moving. It was emotional. It was funny. The visuals were stunning.
Come on.
And I loved it. Like I would say, even for those without kids, like it is definitely worth watching. And I'm not a big movie guy, but I loved it. So, and I'll give Wicked my honorable mention as well.
Did you go and see it?
Go to see Wicked?
Yeah.
Bro.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Bro. You saw it with me.
I believe I was sitting next to you.
So sorry. I completely forgot. So I've seen it 3 times now. So I forgot that the first time I saw it fair was enough. With you.
Was yes, with, yes. Fair. We had a few of us from Bridgeway that went. It was a lot of fun. All right. We will be right back.
Well, we talked about movies, but also there are some really good TV shows that came out this year. What is one that you watched that you really enjoyed this year, Pastor?
I, once again, am not much like with movies, I'm not the best person to talk to about this because I watch very little TV that's not sports. So I don't watch a ton of shows. My wife would be able to give a much more nuanced answer. But my favorite show that I did watch this year that my wife brought to my attention was Man on the Inside on Netflix, starring Ted Danson with Mary Elizabeth Ellis, Lila Rich Creek Estrada, and a handful of others. I loved this show. It was short. It was only like 8 episodes. And kind of, it was totally different than Wild Robot, but similar in the sense that it just kind of had a little bit of everything. It made you laugh. It made you cry. It had very touching moments. It had very difficult moments of people navigating challenging situations. Ted Danson is like having a moment here. I don't know how old that guy is.
Come on.
But like, he was not a young man like when I was a kid. And I mean, he was terrific in The Good Place. And now he was just extraordinary in Man on the Inside. So we ended up watching like 4 or 5 episodes in a row at my parents' house.
Come on.
And it was just wonderful. I loved the show. So, and then my honorable mention, this is, again, I don't watch a lot of fiction or anything. On Netflix right now, there are like behind the scenes sports documentaries for like every sport.
Come on.
I'm into it. But they made a series called Sprint that was all about kind of the top sprinters in the world. And obviously it was an Olympic year. So it was kind of following them through the trials all the way through the Olympic Games. And there was a lot surrounding sprinting in the Olympic Games this year. And obviously they, you know, NBC does a very good job of kind of making the sprinters, like helping us understand them as people and really getting behind them. So then to hear more of their backstory, like I just loved it. That was my like, you know, turn it on while I'm doing chores or something, you know, show for the last like several months. And yeah, it was phenomenal. So Sprint on Netflix, super fun. How about you?
Love that. I really enjoyed The Chosen. I watch less TV and more movies because I have commitment issues. But there's a show called Silo. And shout out to Lucian, our audio engineer, who kind of helped, I think he put me onto it. And Silo is about this community that is inside this big stone silo, and they don't know why they're in there, and they've built this whole life inside this big, you know, silo. And it just was a real good exploration of like what it means to organize a society.
Interesting.
And all of the complexities of it. So
what network is that on?
Silo is on Paramount. TV One. Okay. TV. Apple TV.
Okay.
Sorry.
There we go. I will tell you real quick, a show on Apple TV I did not like that I started watching because the premise sounded interesting, but I was not into it.
Yeah?
My wife made me come back and watch the last episode with her because it had a big cliffhanger. Severed.
Yeah.
Starring Adam Scott, who I haven't seen it, but... I am a child when it comes to like my tolerance of creepiness in TV shows. And this show was creepy as heck. So
yeah.
I was not into it.
Yeah. Honorable mention, season 3 of The Chosen was fire.
That's what I've heard. I think I'm the only Christian who has yet to watch The Chosen.
Hell is your portion.
But, yeah, I guess so. But I'm glad to hear that. And someday I will watch it. And all right, so that is television. Now we're going to get out of kind of media here for a minute. And we're just talking about new things that we engaged with this year for the first time. It, obviously, if it's new, it's for the first time. But Pastor Judah, what was one of your favorite new things that you did this year?
The way you frame that, I think I answered it differently than you might answer it, but I'm going to stick with my answer.
Okay.
I did a new thing that I got.
Oh, that works too.
For the first time in my life, you know, I have areas that I will spend money, big money on, and some areas that I've always just been very judgmental of people who spend a lot of money in that area. One of them has always been headphones.
Okay.
I've always been like, I'm not spending hundreds of dollars on headphones. But I did this year. I got some Bose headphones. They were like $175. And I love them.
Yeah.
They are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I also spent $76 on a Stanley tumbler. and I like very judgmental of Stanley tumblers. I love mine. So those were just two new things. But I think the headphones for me was a big deal because I did not realize how incredible a sonic experience you could have with really wonderful headphones.
Yeah.
And so I like am listening to like old music again and just like getting lost in the sound, and it's been really cool.
Yeah. Good headphones, if you can afford them, are well worth it. And
yeah.
It really does change
Well, these
experience.
These better be well worth it, because listen, that's a lot of money.
That price.
Yeah. Point, what about you? Okay. Something new you got or did?
Something new that I did. So I have been a runner off and on my entire life. Tons of injuries, and that's been a drag. But really, really grateful for the fact that I was generally healthy throughout 2024. But this is kind of a trend in the running world right now. But and I am fully jumping in and I'm into it. It's something called Zone 2 running, where you run based on heart rate, not on perceived effort or even on, you know, how good you're feeling. That basically you have a heart rate cap, which is pretty low typically. And if you get above that cap, you immediately slow down and that's it. And I finish my runs and I'm not exhausted. I don't like hate myself. I'm not breathing super heavy. I can just kind of, you know, have a quick stretch, quick little rinse off, and then go on and have a relatively normal day afterwards. And the theory behind it is you do about 80% of your training in that lower zone. It decreases the risk of injury. It helps kind of build endurance at a cellular level. And then that other 20, you're pushing it a little bit harder. So I actually have kind of, like, I've always hated treadmills, and I've kind of gotten a little bit into treadmill running this year.
Interesting.
And I just love it. I throw a towel over the display so I don't have to be depressed at how slow I'm going. And I get my tablet out that I can put the font big enough to read and put on my over-ear headphones for some instrumental music. And I am in my own little world.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here and tell you the hour flies by, but just kind of, you know, the hour goes by and
the fact that you run for an hour a day and then therefore probably read an hour a day, just it's highly productive. I just hate it.
I'll treadmill maybe 3 or 4 times a week and then run outdoors.
He's going to try to talk it down now and make it sound like it's not dope.
But great. It is dope. And
yeah, it is.
Yeah. And it's been a wonderful thing for me this year. And I'm not injured. I feel pretty good. I've been able to push longer distances and it's gone all right. And it's been cool. Quick honorable mention. I'm not a baseball fan, and my son got into baseball, wanted to play baseball for the first time this year. We weren't sure how that was going to go, and I loved being a baseball parent. It was a blast. We really enjoyed it.
Was there a distinction between being a basketball parent and being a baseball parent that you experienced?
I have very little experience being a basketball parent because I've always coached.
That makes sense.
But the biggest thing is I was nervous about holy mother, these games are long. But the fact is, yeah, the games are long, but there's quite a bit of downtime. So a lot more chatting amongst the parents, a lot more kind of connection in that way. And you truly get a chance to cheer for every kid because every kid comes up to bat.
Yeah.
Whereas in basketball and soccer, the less skilled players kind of, it's just tough.
They don't get the ball as much.
They disappear from the game a little bit.
They don't get the ball as much.
So yeah, I loved it. It was a phenomenal experience and looking forward to the spring when my son is going to play again.
Love that.
There you go.
Love that.
All right. Now I know, Pastor Judah, you're a big traveler.
Yep.
And you have been all over the world, and this was a big travel year. I mean, every year is a big travel year for you.
Not 2025.
What, what was maybe a place or two that were the favorites that you visited this year?
Yeah, my top two places. I want to just say for the record, I tried really hard to think about a place that wasn't international, just so that I'm not on here flexing.
See, this is how life works, by the way, everybody. When you don't have children and you don't have sort of the expense and time required there, the money that I spend raising humans.
Yeah.
Pastor Judah spends gallivanting around the
world. So. Correct. I took my family to France for New Year's, coming into this new year, the previous, coming into 2024. It was so freaking expensive. I was I'm going to treat my family. And I was
mistake.
This is terrible. I'm never bringing you guys anywhere again. This is expensive. So I went to India this year.
That's right. You did.
And it had the most beautiful architecture that I've ever seen. I think I've told anybody who will listen that when I stood before the Taj Mahal, the thought that went through my mind is that there's no way possible for the castles we're promised in heaven to be more beautiful than this.
Wow.
It was breathtaking. I mean, it it knocks the wind out of you.
Wow.
It's just, you can't help but cry. You know, it's stunning. And so, and you have that juxtaposed with such intense and chronic poverty and intense and chronic sickness and intense and chronic corruption. And you have a culture that is very warm and very inviting and very selfless. And so it's this swirl of the best and worst of humanity in a way that's just mind-blowing.
Man,
so India, and then I also went to Japan this year. And Japan is my number two in terms of food. Huh. Everything in Japan tastes good. Wow. Listen, it tastes so good. And everywhere, expensive restaurants, cheap restaurants. I had chicken from a gas station. I want you to know, if you didn't know, I'm black. We make the best fried chicken. I want you to know our Japanese brothers and sisters demolished it. I mean, that food was so wonderful. I said I could never stay here long term because I would be 400 pounds in a week. It was crazy.
Wow, okay. So Japan. Those are, would not think like fried chicken.
Yes.
In Japan. Yeah,
everything that I'm everything everywhere is fantastic.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Shout out to Japan and their food.
Yeah. 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 What about you?
Did not log quite the miles that you did this year, but did have the bucket list checking experience of visiting Banff, Alberta, Canada, which was unbelievable. Yeah. I would go back there in a second. Even with lousy weather, it was just spectacular. The drive from Banff up to Jasper, they say, is one of the most scenic drives in the world. And it delivered, man. And I go back and look at those pictures. It was incredible. And it was just my wife and I, so we got to just travel, just the two of us, which was wonderful. And I love being out in nature.
Yeah.
And they just have colors up there that do not exist in California, where it doesn't rain that much. So Banff was unbelievable.
Question.
And cannot recommend it.
Did you do Lake Louise? You went to Lake Louise? Did you do that hike? There's like hikes right by Lake Louise that I every year say I'm going to do it, and I never do them. Did you do
every year? Do you like visit
well,
annually?
I went. I did for like 5 years. Wow. I did. I would go every summer to Alberta and then do Banff. And so anyway, I just was curious if you did it and how hard it was. Because I heard it was a really hard hike.
So
and that
we
always...
did the hike. There's a hike there to this tea house.
Okay.
And here's the funny thing. Okay, so I've traveled. I've been in cold places.
Sure.
And I went to freaking Canada without a coat because it was going to be in like,
the
50s, which it was not in the 50s. It was in the 40s, and that's at the like ground level. So, and I didn't
you
even
didn't
bring,
think you were going to need a jacket for the 50s?
I know. I'm
sorry,
not
you're not.
Myself.
You don't have any ounce of fat on you.
Multiple layers of like merino wool, sweatshirts, the whole thing. But it was dumb. I'm not here to defend myself at all.
Okay,
but then, and
I
didn't even bring my hiking boots too, because I figured, okay, I'm there with my wife. Like we're just gonna do relatively mellow hiking. So we hiked to the tea house. It was actively snowing, and I'm the clown wearing running shoes and no coat.
That's hilarious.
Probably all the other people talking in languages that I don't understand,
100%.
Saying, "Look at that moron from California."
He must be from California.
And it was even like without the snow definitely made it challenging in terms of there's quite a bit on the ground. But even without it, it's a pretty challenging hike.
Yeah.
It's 2 miles pretty much. It's not long, but it's 2 miles pretty much straight uphill. But it was fun. Honorable mention, the place that I am most likely to live if I ever leave California, Bend, Oregon.
Yeah.
Love Bend, Oregon. We
Come
were there
on.
For 9 days this summer, big family thing, and it was phenomenal. We'll be right back. We're going to shift now to talking a little bit about Bridgeway, Pastor Judah.
This
church is a huge part of our lives, obviously.
That's right.
Huge number of our listeners are from Bridgeway, and I know we're both really grateful to be part of what God is doing here at Bridgeway for a lot of different reasons. Plenty we could look back on from this year, but what were some of your favorite Bridgeway moments from 2024?
Yeah, I thought one really, really special moment, our worship pastor, Pastor Dylan, has been very public about dealing with some panic attacks. And there have been a couple of moments where he's had panic attacks on stage while leading worship, and one particular moment, just as soon as it began to happen, he kind of looks at Candace, communicates with her. She's one of our staff members. She's playing keys. And she starts praying for him. And people from the crowd come and staff members come and just surround him. And one of my students, my young adult students, was talking about how in that moment he felt the presence of God more than any other time in his life.
Wow.
And he wasn't necessarily one of the folks like trying to help. I mean, not that he wasn't trying,
no,
but you know, he just was in the space.
Yeah.
And that is the power of what God can do in our, like when the scripture says, strength made perfect in weakness, right? Like that was super dope. And then I just have one honorable mention, and that is we had Pastor Tamara come here and preach. She pastors a church in Sacramento, but it was the first time that we had a African-American woman preach, as I understand it, preach on the main service. And she has a particular style that is not our norm at Bridgeway. But it blessed people. Yep. And I love that we are a space that holds space, maybe sometimes even too much space for diverse voices and diversity to show up and be itself. And I am the recipient of that culture that Pastor Lance really spearheads. So those are two cool moments
from
Ridgeway for me.
Those were amazing moments. And I think you look back at everything Pastor Dylan has gone through, and obviously you hate it for him.
Yeah.
But what that has shown about our congregation, what that has shown about kind of the safety here you can be who you are in moments where it's really hard and there's not this like judgment. There's not this, we need to put on the happy face and pretend like it's all okay. But rather when you have those moments of weakness that you can expect prayer and support and covering. And I know if Pastor Dylan were sitting here, he would talk about how meaningful that's been to him.
Yeah.
And I think just being part of this community, to not feel that extra pressure that it's not okay to be weak at times. And it's not okay to not look like everything's perfect. I don't know how people survive in cultures like that.
Yeah.
And obviously, Tamara, I mean, Jenny Lynn Clayville, sorry, that's not her name. Jenny Wong Clayville, there we go, spoke here. And just the diversity, male, female diversity in different ethnicities, it's phenomenal.
And styles.
Totally.
Styles.
And styles. Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. It's pretty phenomenal.
I love that. All right, your turn, Pastor Brian. What were some cool Bridgeway moments for you?
Well, you took great ones, but I am proud of our Faith and Culture series, which I referenced earlier. That was a ton of work, and I continue to be proud of the fact that Bridgeway doesn't shy away from difficult issues. I just look at the tragedy, and I don't use that word lightly, at how many Christian spaces have kind of given themselves over to worldly politics. In our area, it tends to be conservative politics, but in other areas, it's liberal politics, so that's not a right-left thing. But I think it is truly tragic how many Christian spaces have given themselves over to those things, and I'm proud to be at a church that says, no, we actually want to bring wisdom into the political space and not be kind of this, kind of megaphone for the right or for the left. And I felt like the amount of work, the vulnerability that went into that was crazy.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways I still haven't totally recovered.
I was going to say, it really took a toll on you. I'm glad you know that. I'm glad you know that. I didn't know if you like knew how, like, we could tell.
Well, and I think it's ongoing, and it took a huge toll on me, but it was worth it. I'm proud of Pastor Lance. I'm proud of the work I was able to put in, and I'm proud of our team that did a ton of work behind the scenes to make that happen. So that was probably my favorite thing from this year. And then the second one's behind the scenes. Like, nobody would know about it because it hasn't been public, but we just decided earlier this year to just make more of an investment in kind of the theological training of some of our non-pastoral staff or staff who have not been in pastoral roles up to this point. Particularly those who, if you look at just what they do week to week, there's certainly a pastoral element to it. So we put on a class this fall. I kind of helped facilitate it, where we invited any staff who wanted to come, but particularly kind of encouraged those who maybe didn't have a bunch of theological training or were in roles where they're doing some pastoral work, even if up to this point we haven't put the title on those roles. And it was a ton of work again, but it was really cool. We had about 12 of us, and it was a broad mix. Like, some people who have MDivs and have been pastoring for many years that are just like, yeah, I would just love to come participate. And for 10 weeks in the fall, we read this 900-page book together.
Yeah, it was a huge book you guys read.
And had great discussions. And I was really pleased with just the opportunity we had to invest in strengthening the theological foundation of some of our staff.
You know what I love so much about that series, that class that you taught, and you played yourself down, but you were the primary facilitator of it.
Facilitator. I wouldn't say teacher, but facilitator.
But the fact that like that you have professor experience, right? That you actually know what it is. You come from Fuller. You understand what it is to be in that space. So it was like quality. And when I was thinking about, you know, the Faith and Culture series on politics, I was really proud of how well we did it, because there are a lot of spaces that talk about politics mm-hmm. in the church that say, oh, we don't shy away from hard issues. And they can be very, very harmful and also very, very biased. And I watched how hard you worked to filter your own bias and to make sure that what the people were getting was a framework for thinking about politics in a healthy way and not you trying to get your candidate elected.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. And certainly I put a ton of effort into that. I think that's a job as pastor, but I think that's a job for a lot of us to kind of try to be aware of our own biases, certainly not project those biases, and then I think argue against our biases and try to figure out, hey, where am I wrong on stuff? And I don't know, hopefully on some small way we're able to model that well. Now, from more serious things, God moving in different ways in our church, to silly things, Pastor Judah, what is a trend from this year that you just don't get?
So I just learned about this trend. Recently we had our young adult Christmas party, and we give away stupid gifts at it, and somebody gave away a toy that was a toilet with a head in it, and I had no idea what this was.
How large is this?
Very small. A very small. It's a toy. It's like plastic.
Okay.
And
so
it's literally
small plastic?
Little plastic toilet.
With a human head.
With a human head coming out of the toilet. Correct.
Got it. So the head, like hair is on top.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Correct. And so it comes from a YouTube trend. A fella, his name is Alexi, and he has a YouTube channel where basically he created these animated videos where human heads come out of toilets and they sing remixes of songs. And it was called the Skibbity Toilet. Trend, I guess.
This is the beginning of Skibbity Toilet.
Apparently.
Wow.
And so, of course, that language has just taken internet slang by storm. And so all of the street youths, as our next gen team calls them, are now using Skibbity to preface anything that is silly or unreasonable or stupid or nonsensical.
That's so funny.
And I don't know why the word Skibbity is great on my nerves. I loathe it. I love slang. I use slang all the time. The more comfortable I am, the more slang I use. But this Skibbity Riz and all that, throw it away. Throw it away. I didn't understand it. I'm not a fan.
I'm just laughing because you know this, obviously. Mm. We did not share our answers with each other beforehand. Written on my laptop.
Is it really?
Right there. Teenage slang. Skibbity toilet is at the top of the list of stupid teenage
it's
slang.
It's stupid.
But, it, you know, Pastor Judah, I feel like I live in denial of my age a lot.
Mm.
And my loathing of teenage slang, I think it's just such evidence that I'm turning into a grumpy old man.
Yeah, you're him. So get off my lawn.
There. Oh, absolutely. All right, now our next topic. What was maybe a moment from this year
You're not going to do yours?
That was mine.
Oh, okay.
Teenage
slang. Okay.
I got nothing else to say.
Okay.
You nailed it.
Cool.
So, but I am affirming your rage at this silliness.
Thank you. I feel affirmed.
All right. What was a moment from this year that was really hard or scary for you?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the year, I had a season, couple months long, of a sudden onset of total body inflammation.
Yeah, that was
my
brutal.
Joints, my skin, just every part of my body was so inflamed, and there was, you know, it came on suddenly and then got progressively worse. And I remember one time I was literally writing a sermon and then I got up to go get something to drink or whatever and my body locked up like mid-stride in my living room for a long time. I could not move. I would get stuck. Like if I sat down, sometimes I would get stuck, like TMI, but like I would sit on the toilet and not be able to get up.
Wow.
And I would have to think about it. It gave me such compassion for what happened. For one, if you have chronic illness.
Yeah.
And two, if you're just older, right?
Yeah.
And there was a season where every movement of my body, I had to think about, okay, if I sit here, how am I going to get it? If I stand here too long, if I, you know, and it was terrible. And I'm really, really grateful. A lot of folks prayed for me.
Yeah.
I did a big diet change. And I got better kind of immediately after the diet change. I like stopped drinking. I mean, I wasn't like drinking,
but I just
got rid of drinking. I changed my diet and it all got better. And then like, I didn't maintain that, but it didn't come back. It hasn't come back so far in Jesus' name.
Yeah,
right now, Lord, keep your hands on me. And so that was it. And a part of the reason it was so scary for me is because it sent me into a little bit of an identity crisis. Yeah. I didn't realize how much my identity was tied into my physical able-bodiedness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was really like, oh, who am I if I can't just like move?
Yeah.
Like, what does this mean for like my life? Like, I built a whole life around moving as I please, when I please. And now that's not an option for me.
Yeah.
And so it was just really scary. It was really hard. I got tested for like a bunch of stuff. And the doctors kept coming back and saying, yeah, you have off the charts inflammation, but it's not Lyme's disease. It's not Crohn's disease. And it's not this and it's not that.
Yeah.
They put me on steroids, but the steroids made me super sick. They made me bruise super easily. They made me like bleed too much. Like if I got like even a little cut somewhere, I would bleed too much. So I couldn't stay on the steroids, and it was just really, really scary. But God brought me out of it, and I haven't gone back since.
Amen.
So.
Amen.
Yeah. What about you?
Mine is not nearly as intense. I think, you know, there were a lot of small challenging moments this year, but what is most salient to me, something I'm trying to understand about myself, is that somehow as I get older and I am, you know, further along in pastoring, I find that the criticism is getting to me more than it used to. And people should know that pastors at a church like Bridgeway, we get more affirmation in a month than a lot of people can get in a year or more at their job. So we are spoiled in that regard. But I just had a few instances this year of really harsh criticism that I felt really was not fair. And in really all of those instances, it was enough that I felt like, hey, I need to kind of respond to this and seek some reconciliation, just help that individual understand, like, hey, this is not, like, your read on this situation is not correct, your understanding of what I said is not correct, kind of you coming at me with this level of vitriol is not correct. And I shouldn't be surprised by this, and I'm not. But in all of those situations, there was never an attempt to, you know, kind of get back in touch or follow up, which was disappointing. So I think I've learned a lot from life as a pseudo public figure, which I don't know, I guess I would describe us as. And it's certainly increased my level of compassion for other public figures
100%.
And the way that I talk about them.
100%.
Just recognizing like, hey, there's a real human there. And
yes.
And I also just don't really understand the mindset of like, I'm just going to fire off an email to a stranger and like tell them they're horrible. And it's like, wow, that feels like a bit much. So I don't know. I'm working with the Lord on that. And how do I kind of, I was sharing with one of our colleagues recently that kind of my difficulty in just moving on from stuff like that is like one of my least favorite things about myself. So yeah, just not a ton, but I think of three instances particularly this year that were just not great.
I
still on some level, even though I felt like I've done the work to kind of, hey, this was like talking with trusted people, like, hey, this isn't legit, right? Like sometimes like we screw up, we get criticized, you got to take your medicine. And, you know, kind of despite working through all of that, like, man, I still, I don't know, carry it with me more than I wish I did.
Yeah, I think in some of it is that we don't have the luxury that, again, I want to echo what Pastor Brian said about, you know, we're not crying here in so many ways. It's the best job on earth. But I think that we don't have the luxury of the levels of separation that other people get from their work performance and their personal life.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a whole life work.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You are always called to do this work. And so, whereas, you know, you can get criticized from customers about the product that you produced and it's, you know, a beautiful table that you worked on really, really hard, but it you get to go home and say, okay, they didn't like the table. I think for some of the work that we do, we go home and say, oh, like they really don't like me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it just grates in a different space. So
yeah,
I get it.
That's true. All right. On a more positive note, what's something from this year that you're proud of?
Mm, I was really brave this year. Nice. I stepped into spaces. I took risks that you know, not everybody in my life even agreed with, but were what I was supposed to do. And I'm proud of how much this year I'm going to say, I'm going to use some slang, but it's not the children's slang. I stood on business this year. I stood on business, meaning that I made some choices that were new choices, different choices, risky choices. Even just in terms of, like, I made some investments financially that were new for me. I worked with some folks that I would not normally have worked with. And I'm just really proud of how much there's still room for me to become who I am.
Yeah.
And I saw some of that happen this year.
Love it.
And then I will say that there were a lot of really, I know we talked about Bridgeway as a whole, but there were some really cool moments where I was, like, really proud of our church. And one of those moments was our kids did a mission trip to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And a part of that mission trip was we went to Hollywood Boulevard and did cardboard testimonies where they had to put, well, they didn't have to, but they were invited to put on one side of the cardboard their kind of pre-Jesus, their struggles, essentially, in this, like, very vulnerable way. And we went out on the boulevard, and on one side they had the negatives or the challenges that they had, and on the other side what the Lord was actively doing or had done.
Yeah.
And it was so hard for them. And not only did they do it in front of strangers and their peers, but then they came back here to this church where their mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles were in the audience and transparent. There were things on those cardboard signs that their parents had no idea about, that their communities had no idea about, and that some of those young folks had promised they were taken to the grave.
Wow.
And they were so open for the sake of other people being encouraged.
Oof.
And when I tell you, my head in the best way was so full. I was just like,
wow,
these are our people. These are the folks who are part of God's church.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Yeah. Amazing. What about you?
Amazing. Gosh, I just, you know, Pastor Judah, you need to stop going first because yours are always so much more, I don't know, they're just better than my things all the time,
whatever
I have to say.
Thank you.
But now I'll a few things. Number one, and this is, again, you know, Bridgeway related. I'm proud of a lot of the work that our discipleship team did this year. A lot of the classes they put on, our start class and how we were able to launch some new community groups like that. I always am so moved when we get to the end of that process and we see that new groups are starting, because that's not like, it's great to, like, bring people to campus and, like, have a great experience and have a cool event. Like, I'm down for that. Like, that's amazing. But when you go, man, we're setting people up for long-term friendship and spiritual growth and discipleship. That's pretty phenomenal. So I love that. And then we've talked about this a little bit already, but, like, just physical health and activity is a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
And I just had a horrible shoulder injury early this year and literally could not lift my head or lift my hand to my, like, even, like, straight out from my shoulder without pain, and kind of worked my way back, remembered one time when I was in Bend, we finished playing pickleball and I just went up to the, you know, bar in the playground and did 7 chin-ups. And it was like, on the one hand, all right, like, I did 7 chin-ups and my shoulder didn't fall off. On the other hand, like, that's way fewer chin-ups than I can do. But it was just a sign of, like, okay, we're getting better.
I'm getting there.
And how much I was able to push through, to keep working hard, being smart about it, and then ultimately to do the Spartan race that I did in November, which was a half marathon, just tons of climbing, a million obstacles. A half marathon is not like that. I've run longer distances than that many times. So the distance isn't the issue, but huge elevation change, tons of difficult obstacles. And it was very emotional. Like, I get emotional when I finish big races, just like, oh my gosh, I freaking did it, you know?
Yeah.
And even to go, man, even from an injury standpoint, to go from nothing, like, can't lift, can't do anything, to working through all of that, to having the discipline to set that alarm early, to keep working hard, and to finish, like, top 10 out of 200 in
my
age group.
Come on.
I don't say that to be braggadocious.
I'll brag about it.
From just this extraordinary place of gratitude, of You know, I share your fear, Pastor Judah, of like body breaking down and not being able to do stuff. And I have a huge amount of compassion for those who are in that space. But I don't know. I'm just proud that 2024, my body worked and I was able to come back from just a really gnarly injury and do push-ups and pull-ups and work my way to that.
And didn't you also have like an Achilles or leg or foot something?
I had a pretty bad foot issue as well that, praise the Lord, seems to have subsided. Yeah. But I'm the king of kind of dumb, non-traumatic injuries. The shoulder injury happened from a traumatic, like it happened in a moment, mm-hmm. but I tend to have bad, just overuse things that never get better. And thankfully, got to avoid most of that this year. All right, last thing. What are you looking forward to in 2025?
Yeah, I am looking forward to a couple of things. One, I think I figured out how AI can actually be helpful for me. It's taken me a long time. Like, I really, like, at first, it was, like, absolutely useless to me. but I think I've really figured out some of the ways that that's going to be really helpful in, like, organizing for me and in, just, like staying on top of some of the administrative responsibilities that I have. I'm looking forward to 2025 because it's a chance to start over. Yeah. I think, you know, very cliche, but I think, you know, I, like a lot of people, I take this time and I think, okay, like, how do I, like, want to be better and then how do I do it? And, you know, next year I have two words that are themes for my year. One of them is no. and so I say that to all, if you know me personally, just know I'm going to be saying no to everything. And it's not that I don't love you or want to do it. It's just that I am really, that's like my default answer is no, I cannot, I will not. And two, sustainability. How can I build a rhythm that is sustainable? Because my big flaw this year, my big challenge this year was inconsistency. I would be great in certain areas and then fall off and then pick back up and get great. And I just want a more even keeled year. Yeah. And so what I hope to do is set the bar a little lower for myself and then like maintain that low bar. That sounds more negative, but
how inspiring. Wow.
But I think that there's something to like really looking at like, no, what can you actually do? What are you actually able to sustain over time? Because it is not, it actually is more harmful to have peaks and valleys in my experience where you're like incredible and then people expect that level and it's not maintainable.
Yeah, you got it. What's sustainable? What can you keep doing?
Yeah. So yeah. No, I gotcha. I'm looking forward to like hopefully being good, better at that and really leaning into those two themes for next year. Yeah, what about you?
Love it. Pretty nonspecific for me in some ways. I just want to kind of keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I feel really blessed to say that. Like, I, you know, got a lot of good things going on and want to continue to work hard in those areas. I think that, I find the new year to be refreshing in terms of just like, all right, 2025, we're turning the page here. And I very much am a growth mindset type person. I always want to get better. I want to be a better pastor. I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better dad. I'm looking forward to, you know, my boys are getting older. And even some specific plans I have for investing in them, particularly my older one, as he's kind of, you know, in that older stage. And I'm looking forward to kind of getting that going. I've been talking about it for a long time, and now it's like, all right, we're going to do it. We're going to kind of get...
Do you want to share what it is? I'm curious what it is. Are you comfortable?
I don't. Okay. I don't. Yeah, no. I mean, it's nothing wild, but it's just kind of, we'll keep that between us. I realize I brought it up. But I don't know. I look forward to a new year of great reading. Hey, the year is over, and I read a presidential biography each year, so I get to pick a new one of those. I have some real goals when it comes to my physical challenges. You know, I want to do a race of a distance I've never done before, and there's that. And so what am I looking forward to? Just possibility, right? Mm. And that sounds very vague, but I just feel like, God is on the throne. Life is still in front of me. There are new opportunities to serve, new opportunities to grow, new opportunities to, and I don't mean this as negative it's going to sound, but just kind of sort of reject kind of cultural definitions of what does it mean to live the good life and go, okay, what does life in the kingdom of God look like? And I feel like I have 100 miles to go, but I don't know, just taking those steps forward.
I think that's so encouraging to hear because I think that there are some folks who are in that same space where they're like, what I'm looking forward to is kind of maintaining and growing. And, you know, they can feel guilty or question. I see this with young people, like, well, why don't I have like these like huge, lofty, you know, and it's like, no, it's actually okay to say what I'm looking at when I look at 2025 is like how to maintain doing what I do well in the future, and how to take advantage of opportunities to become better.
Well, and how do you be great at living your life?
Yeah,
not how do you be great at something else?
Yeah,
how do you be the best version of you? How do you, if you're going to put it in Christian terms, how do you seek to become more of who Jesus would be if he were you? Like, that's it. Like, it don't matter if you have a big TikTok following or not. Like, that just sounds like stress to me.
Listen, I'm not on that TikTok.
Yeah, me
I'm
neither.
Scared of it.
So
I already got an addictive personality.
I think that, just that best version of you, man, with God's help. So, hey, we appreciate you listening and being part of the Engaging Culture community. Looking forward to jumping back in with another more normal episode next week. And we might be introducing
A new host.
You'll have to be there.
Also, I think I if there are things that you as a listener are interested in hearing unpacked or would like to hear us unpacked or engage with, topics, cultural phenomenons, anything like that, be sure to let us know.
Yeah. Email us, stop us in the lobby.
100%. We want to engage with culture well. So happy new year.
Amen. We'll see you next week.